Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Greetings and welcome back to another episode of Cultimatum, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And with me tonight is my co-host Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you so much for that introduction. Today we are being joined by Kim Kelly, a powerhouse voice for truth and justice, born into the notorious Children of God cult where her mother was a leader. Kim is both a survivor and a whistleblower. Her experience with human trafficking within the cult became the foundation for her relentless advocacy and her work with helping to dismantle abusive systems from the inside out. Kim now partners with law enforcement to train officers, conduct sexual predator sting operations, and to expose corruption within shady nonprofits and organizations that operate under the guise of doing good. Through her two businesses and her powerful presence on TikTok, she educates others about red flags, brainwashing, and the deep work of deprogramming and healing. She's not just surviving, she's leading the way forward for other survivors with grit, grace, and thank you so much, Kim, for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here and glad to have this conversation.
Yeah, oh, we're welcome. Excited and to hear your.
Yeah, and that was quite a list of accomplishments and yeah. Intro. So, okay. Where would you like to start?
There's a lot to say in this. My message is generally focused on the experience of children. I focus on combating child exploitation, which is a massive spectrum of, let's call it, intensity or bad things happening to children. So if you'd like, we can start with unpacking cults or we can start with the work I'm doing today. Your choice.
I say let's start at the beginning with your cult experience.
Agreed.
All right. Well, let's talk about cult experience, but let's focus on children born into and raised in cults, because a big part that society does not understand or account for when we're even addressing cults is not the adults who decide to join and stay and leave. It's the children born into it and essentially raised under a rock where they don't have a choice. They did not choose to join. They have no context for the outside world. And every single adult around them, every single picture, book, thing they're allowed to watch or listen to, or every single piece of information they retain growing up in this very sheltered and controlled environment, the way I oversimplify it is everything says red is blue. And that's what they grow up understanding, and that's all they know. So unlike most adults who have context for the outside world, children being born and raised in that environment where every single thing reinforces this belief that red is blue, it is a very different level of brainwashing, let's call it. So let's unpack brainwashing a little bit later, but just realize how effective brainwashing can be on grown adults who should know better, you could say, but we also understand how powerful these control and manipulation tactics are and how well they work today even on adults who should know better. But then apply that to a child who has no context. So there's a lot that we as a society need to further understand, not only to better understand cults and how to protect people from the harmful ones, but specifically how to protect children from these environments. A lot of these things are hiding in plain sight, and a lot of times they get away with it because they always have a front. They always have the corporate brochure version of, yay, we're just good people doing good things. And unfortunately, the public still falls for a lot of that. Now, we can continue unpacking all these things I'm going to touch on, but religion is often used as that guise, as that front, because people can look the other way when you say, yay, God, we're just here to do good things with a smile on our face. And look, the kids are smiling too. So everything's fine. Now, thankfully for me, I have a real dark sense of humor, real sarcastic sense of humor, if you will, about this. That's also my chosen form of healing. But just know that, like, if I laugh and smile about some really dark things, my disclaimer is that that's my chosen form of healing. It's also because a lot of these things, I can't take seriously how prevalent this evil is today in our society. So it's one thing to comprehend what I overcame and escaped. Just for context, I escaped when I was 20 years old. So the first 20 years of my life was this extremely controlled environment that most people could never understand. And I'm not asking them to. But what none of us should tolerate, what none of us should be willing to look the other way about, is what's still going on today in America, likely to children you know right now. But because there's a lack of awareness or understanding, a lot of people are unaware of what these children are experiencing and what we, the people, should be doing about it.
I don't even know how to respond to that other than for the past 60-something episodes, that's one of the things that I have been screaming about on this podcast is why this is going on and law enforcement or authorities are looking the other way. And Melody, right? It's something that I have been...
I knew you would love her as a guest, Andrew. When I would listen to her on TikTok, I was like, I hope I can get her on the show because I knew that you... Because she's doing exactly what you are saying that somebody should be doing. So, yes. Yeah, no, I'm glad she's here, and I want her to explain what she's doing, too. Yeah.
Yes, I want to hear more. So, I mean, I'm not going to get on my soapbox, but just know that that's... You know where my head's at, because yes. I've been screaming about this for this entire podcast.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you guys being a voice for the voiceless. Not a lot of people are willing to host this message on their platform. And one of the sad things is that this message of protecting children has become so politicized. So much stigma has been attached to it. So many unnecessary layers of conspiracy theories and complications have been added. Promise you that's not helping the victims. But I also am sad to see so many people afraid to talk about protecting children. So thank you for not being one of those cowards, but said quite directly, none of us should be tolerant of that evil or willing to look the other way. And there's a big need to correct the premise, to understand the problem so that we can understand what the solutions are and are not. Because there are a lot of band-aids that aren't helping anyone, but dang, they make politicians look pretty. So part of understanding the problem is also understanding what I'm calling the sharp end of the sword versus the people or group of people wielding the sword. I feel like it's important for us to unpack the root causes because a lot of well-meaning people don't fully understand the problem, and I'm not knocking them for that. But what I am saying is I'm here to help correct the premise and also help unpack the layers of this very intentional corruption. I'm very intentional with my words, and as you can tell, I've overthought this quite a lot. And there are a lot of people.
You're super articulate, and I am excited to hear what you're going to teach not only us, but our audience. I'm excited to hear it, so keep going.
Thank you. And again, the sarcastic sense of humor in my tone is absolutely merited because, said quite frankly, this is a stupid problem to have, and it's an intentional problem. So again, I can't take it seriously, but I'm here to help unpack it for the public, and I get to laugh in the face of this evil because not only have I overcome it, but none of us should be tolerant of weak, pathetic cowards hurting children. None of us should be afraid to talk about. All of us should be willing to be a voice for the voiceless. So again, thank you for hosting this message, and it is my honor to expose this evil because 100% of the time, anyone who would abuse a child is a weak, pathetic coward. Let me just start there because there's this narrative that isn't helping anyone that's like, oh no, big scary bad guys, let's all be afraid. Or let's all shake our fists and be very mad and emotional, but sit here and just let it happen or watch it unfold. And that's not helpful. So again, I'm very solutions oriented in my approach, and I'm also big on educating the different layers of this problem. So let's start with who's behind this? Why is it a thing? why is this still thriving in 2025 in the country of the United States of America? So let me just start here. I was born in Brazil. I was raised all over the world. My parents are from America. My parents decided to join a cult. They were kooky adults who made a choice back in the 60s to join this like Jesus freak movement and yay, whatever. Okay, crazy kooky hippies, all fine until you start having kids. That's where the line in the cement needs to kick in, because look, if you're an adult, you get to go do kooky things, free country. But you can't bring kids into those kooky decisions with you. At least you shouldn't be able to. Now, there is a slippery slope here, because I'm not asking the federal government to have any more control of anybody's life. That's not the solution. I'll unpack that further. Just know that I'm not assuming like they'd be helpful in regulating this issue, nor do I want them to like tell people how to raise their kids. I'm just saying that as a society, we don't have protections in place for the children or the second and even third generations of children born into cults and these very abusive controlled environments. So like you said at the intro, I was born and raised in what was called the Children of God, aka the Family International. Every cult rebrands with bad publicity. That's one of many patterns. I'll just kind of touch on some things to lay the foundation. My mother worked her way into a position of cult leadership or position of power within the cult. You know how they say like they sold their souls for rock and roll? She did not sell. She just gave not only, you know, her life and her sovereignty, but then she started raising kids. Now, just to put it out there, in order to work your way into position of power in any cult, you have to be very dedicated, basically much more evil than the rest and willing to do much more bad things. So it's not like we got, how do I say this? Leadership is a whole cult within a cult. And that's a whole other thing to unpack. It's not at all a flex. It's like being Ghislaine Maxwell's daughter. Like there's nothing good about that. And also my mother is responsible for the abuse of tens of thousands of children. For those familiar with the Children of God, she was Sarah Davidito. She wrote the book on child abuse.
Okay. And just a lot to confirm to our audience, I'd like you to just confirm this. The Children of God is known to be a cult that actually condones, encourage, and taught child sex abuse. Am I correct?
It's a very nice way to say it. So for anyone who studied cults, which I'm not asking anyone to do, but there's like a list of top 10, top five most notoriously abusive. The Children of God was absolutely one of them. Most notorious for not only, we're using the word abuse quite broadly here. And I don't know how specific I can be with words on these platforms, but everything from pedophilia to trafficking. So yes, there were all the bad things happening to children. And again, bad things happening to adults, but we're just going to leave that alone because at least in my opinion, you know, like adults decided to join, no matter how powerful the brainwashing was, it's a very different level of choice than that of a child who not only is literally forced to be there and can't leave, but also has no advocacy or knowledge or connection to the outside world. So like well-meaning people will say things like, wow, you escaped when you were 20 or you left when you were 20. That's a really long time to stay. Or like, wow, why didn't you leave sooner? People who know what they're talking about don't say that. And it doesn't offend me, but here's an example of that. Let's pretend that 5-year-old me, 8-year-old me in Brazil was able to get past the adults and the guard dogs and run through the compound and like scale the really tall cement wall with the glass and the barbed wire at the top and get to the other side of the compound wall. Where would I have gone? Rhetorical question. Where's the safe place for survivors of trafficking, specifically child trafficking, specifically American children trafficked abroad? Would I have been safer in the streets of Brazil?
No.
Unfortunately not. So even physically could have escaped, whatever that means for a child, even if I would have remained outside the what would safety even mean at that point?
Right.
So, you know, again, there's a lot of layers of complication to this.
I just want to add here too, and I'm sure you'll understand this, Kim, is that also, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that also what keeps you in a cult are not physical bars. They're mental bars in your mind. They are, it's not always about the walls and the barbed wire fence. It's about what you believe. That will keep you more there more than a physical gate or a wall.
100%. And again, in the mind of a child, you know, it's much more, children are sponges. It's much easier to help them believe red is blue.
Yeah, or the indoctrination of if you leave, something bad is going to happen to you. So as an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old, if you're weekly or daily, that if you leave, God will punish you or something will happen. If that child tries to, like you said, scale that 10-foot wall, what's on the other side of that wall, he or she, so I'm just backing up what Melody said. There's a mental prison in there as well.
And again, you know, you're in a third world country, you see people that are worse off than you, like this belief is reinforced But to your point, so the way I oversimplify that analogy, imagine being born and raised on Mars, and you're told that Earth is a flaming ball of fire, and if you jump off Mars, you're going to die and burn. God's going to punish you. You're a child. You know nothing different. That's all you've been told, and that's what everyone around you reinforces. Then you make the decision, which is a very difficult one even for adults, but as a child, just imagine making the decision to make that leap of faith into the unknown, and then you land on Earth, and you're like not flaming in a ball of fire. And then what do you do? Because by the way, you don't exist on paper. Your family's in a cult and they think you're evil now because you're like betraying God or them or whoever. You have no support system. I had no education. I had no bank. Like, what are you supposed to do? So it's a very different mentality, if you will. But it's also, yes, a lot of people underestimate beyond the physical control, the mental control that these controlled organizations have. And again, it's a very different level when it comes to children. So there's a lot more we can unpack there. I wrote something a few years ago about the 10 rules of every cult. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that when you were, the example you gave in Brazil, if let's say that happened in America. So the child at 8 or 9, 10 was able to get out, victim of abuse, of some whatever, mental abuse, sexual abuse, and he or she was able to get outside the compound, let's say. I would think they might have a better chance to get help if they ran in towards, I don't know, go to the police station. Or I think if I was walking down the street and a child came up to me and said, please help me, I'm being abused, I would help that child. But that's here.
Let's unpack the reality of that, because that's a very noble statement. And I think everyone would agree with you. But let's unpack the reality. Okay, I focus a lot on child trafficking and exploitation. Exploitation is a very broad word. Let's narrow this down to trafficking. And there are many forms of trafficking, labor trafficking, sex trafficking, et cetera, et cetera. But let's also narrow down our focus to the United States. Now, like I said, for the majority of my childhood, I was born and raised overseas. However, for 4 years of my childhood, I was in Houston, Texas, Harris County, which is actually one of the hotspots for human trafficking in the entire nation. For 4 years, from the age of 10 to 14, obviously a child, not nearly 18, I was on the streets in restaurants and bars and supermarkets and stores and people's houses and famous landmarks like the George R. Brown Convention Center and many other places I could name. Here's the point. Not one adult, not one law enforcement officer, not one concerned citizen had the awareness, maybe the courage, to ask if I was okay. To say, what are you doing here in the middle of the street? Why are you over here begging for money? Why are you alone? Shouldn't you be in school? Not one person. Have you eaten today? Where do you live? Where are your parents? Not one person had that awareness. Now, let's take this further. Let's pretend like one person could have had the awareness to just ask the right questions. Let's unpack this real quick. Not only would that have reduce the predator's ability to operate, which is what awareness does. It makes it harder for bad guys to get away with doing bad things to children. But it would have meant that I spent less time on the streets. Now, let me pause right there. If a law enforcement officer would have come up and been like, you can't be here, I'm going to take you back to your family. Now, my family was the bad guys. So they would have returned me to home, which would have not rescued me or saved me at all, but it would have reduced the predator's ability to operate. So you see how this gets complex. I would have spent less time on the streets, but more importantly, around 25,000 other children would have spent less time on the streets if one person would have had that awareness. So I agree with you that most of us, if a child came up and said, I need help, would probably hopefully help. Generally, the child doesn't know they're being abused. Generally, the child doesn't know what's happening and much less knows how to properly communicate that to who they think are stranger dangers. They are told the world is out to get them. They are told their abuser is the good guy. It's called Stockholm Syndrome, and that the world is dangerous. So why would I go ask a scary, dangerous person for help?
That was my point earlier, that the indoctrination of the children says that it's scarier out there, that it's danger outside those walls. When you were in Houston, did you were alone? You said you were out there begging from
the streets. I was often alone for the entire day. When I was in restaurants and malls and things, I was often alone for the entire day. Sometimes I was with other children. I was rarely with my parents. Often I was with other children or teenagers.
So they sent you out.
Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what you would. Sent out, you were sent out to what? To recruit, to get money, to...
So finances is always the lifeblood of any organization, but specifically the corrupt ones. Generally, okay, so let's unpack trafficking. There are many different forms. Like I mentioned, labor trafficking. With a lot of these cults, they will use the children to, let's use a pretty word, like fundraise. because child labor sounds terrible. They'll use the children to, quote, fundraise because it's a really good source of income. So the other way we could say that is like begging on the streets. We did that from all the third world countries as well as when I was in America. So anything from like singing on the streets, like I have pictures of like 10 kids, you know, guitars and whatever, singing near the Cristo in Brazil, which is this big famous statue. We're Americans in third world countries. Yes, begging on the streets. That's really strange. I'm not here to justify anything that's happening far, far away. I'm just saying that fast forward to the USA, Houston, Texas, none of us should be tolerant of that happening within our own country because that should be something we should be able to control, right? Now, for not one adult to stop and ask, are you okay in 170 degree weather in Texas? You're out here in a median and in these very busy roads begging on the streets for money. Now, real quick, because we talked about the corporate front, the guys, what we were telling people is that we were fundraising for our Christian missionary work. If anyone didn't know, the Children of God was a Christian cult. That means 100% of the bad guys were doing bad things in the name of Jesus and God and the Bible. That might be very shocking to Christians. Let me hold your hand while I say this. A lot of bad people are using your God to do a lot of very bad things to children. And I am mature and healed enough to understand that it wasn't Jesus and God in the Bible abusing tens of thousands of children. I just need y'all to know and be intolerant of bad guys who will use nice sounding words like Christian missionaries to do bad things to children. I'm asking you to look further. I'm asking you not to trust people just because they go to the same building and sing the same songs as you. I'm asking people to be very aware that predators are very strategic. And they will exploit vulnerable communities. Now, I'm not saying churches should be less welcoming or trusting necessarily in people. I'm saying churches and places of faith and the body of believers as a whole should be much more willing to protect children at all costs. Jesus was pretty clear about that. Now, this is a cult joke, but I can sing the Bible to you in three languages because I was raised on the Bible as well as all these cult belief type publications. We can go into that. But anyway, there's always a manipulation of, let's call it truth. There's always a lot of lies involved in the brainwashing, but that's how you brainwash people. You take a little bit of truth, you mix it with whatever percentage of lies, and you spoon feed it to people. Now, again, when it comes to children, you don't have to do that much work to change their belief system because you're starting rather fresh. They're sponges. With adults, there was a lot of hippies back in the day that were like abusing drugs or whatever was happening. And then they joined this Jesus freak movement, and yay, now, you know, I was lost and now I'm found and Jesus saved me. So now I'm super dedicated to this savior hero thing, group, people that like, yay, Jesus and free hugs. So this is what's right. I'm going to unpack something I wrote late one night many years ago, and I haven't made any edits to it. And I've run this by many different scholars and experts. And let me know if you guys have anything to add because it's pretty spot on. This is the playbook of every cult. And you'll realize how much this applies to many different communities and aspects of our society today, including politics. There's a playbook, and while you might change out the name of the cult or the kooky things they do or what they call it, it's still a playbook. The 10 rules of every cult. 1, they must not know. Cults have layers. The outer public layer is somewhat like a corporate brochure. 2, it is written. Take it by faith, because that's God's will. 3, we are the only ones who are right. Everyone else has it wrong. We're the only chosen. We know best. This is God told us because we're special. 4, we make our own rules. In that cult, they said, what is done is love, in love is love. They literally called abuse God's love. Chew on that. 5, this is what's best. To this day, many adults, including my mother, will say, I have no regrets. That was the best way I could have raised you. That was God's highest will. 6, recruit. Full stop. 7, you must earn your place. Participation is not optional. Just remember, this applies to many different branches of many things in our society today. If they worked themselves to a position of power, please believe that they earned that right. Please believe that they were not unaware of all the things they had to overlook working up those ranks and getting to that level. 8, support. By whatever means necessary. For most of them, financial contributions are a priority, and those who give the most money have the most freedom or power within their cult. I wrote this many years ago. Isn't that crazy? 9, dedication. Do whatever it takes. Forsaking family and friends, making incredible sacrifices, enduring endless pain and discomfort, giving up your kids, whatever it takes because it's God's highest will. 10, if you're not for us, you are against us. That very simplified overview summarizes every cult, and like I said, many other things in our society today. I want people to understand this playbook, these tactics, because they can be reverse engineered. They can inform us and help us not only spot the signs and decide what's harmful or what's not, but help us help the victims, because there are many people, adults included, that don't know they're in a cult, don't know that it's harmful, and don't understand the intensity of control that these groups have over their mind. And that's a powerful thing.
Melody, do you realize that she just gave us the playbook that we've been talking about for 60 plus episodes?
I was just thinking the same thing, Andrew. I was thinking, we talk about how, did these cult leaders like get a playbook in the mail, or do they all join the same website? Because you hear, I mean, I've been in a cult. All the things you just mentioned fit my cult, and they fit every other cult that we've covered on our show, because they do have a playbook and they use very distinct tactics every single time. And everything you said
and we
is familiar. She just sent it to us.
She just put it in the chat. Thank you. I was writing it down. Huh. Every guest that we've had on had, I shouldn't say every, but many of them had the exact same type of indoctrination and stories, and everything fit a pattern. And Melody and I would always say they must have got it from the same playbook. They just changed the name of their cult. So finally, we have somebody who actually gave us the playbook.
Because it literally came to me late one night, and I wrote it down, like, just it just came out of my brain, and I haven't made any edits to it. And like I said, I've run it by a lot of people. It describes every single one of them.
Now, agreed. Yes,
nuances and details and what the fuck they call their weirdness, but it's a playbook. Now, if you want to get really deep, we could talk about the three-letter agency that was not only very aware, but that was doing a lot of what we call in marketing split testing, or observing control groups of how people respond to different types of brainwashing. So there's a lot of evidence on that. Please know this is not a conspiracy theory, and please know there are many people that have taken that and run off with it. But if you do some real research on the real experts that have not only studied this, but publicized different aspects of this, just know that our government is very aware and has been collecting a lot of data on how this works and the best practices.
Does the three-letter agency start with an F?
Starts with a C. The movies, the one that starts with an F. Love you, everyone that I know in the FBI, but we call them desk job nerds. They're mostly lawyers. They're not the tactical dudes. Like, we love you, but that's in the Hollywood movies. Let's keep it there. The one that starts with a C is a little bit different in how they operate and their jurisdiction and the power that they have. But that being said, so we mentioned this at the beginning, and I'm going to touch back on it. When people say things like, you know, law enforcement is the one behind the trafficking, or like law enforcement is this very broad term that people should know incorporates not only local, but also state and federal. Okay, so it's this really broad term applying to law enforcement. It's different than government agencies. So for example, the CIA, the FBI, et cetera, those are not, you know, those can be incorporated, but it's also, there's all these different levels of it. What I want people to understand is the difference between the sharp end of the sword and the people or group of people wielding the sword. I'm not saying one or the other does not do damage. I'm saying the people wielding the sword are the ones with the power. A lot of people give law enforcement way too much power or credit. And I'm gonna unpack what that means. But while I understand the sentiment, and while I agree that there is corruption at every level, I am saying the local police, law enforcement in general as a whole, they are not the ones creating the laws, deciding who to prosecute, deciding who to go after or who to leave alone. Generally, they are the sharp end of the sword. Who is then wielding the sword? Let's focus on that only if we're interested in the actual truth and the actual root causes, because to solve a problem, you have to understand the problem. Otherwise, you're putting band-aids on the wrong wound. Does that make sense?
Well, I'm interested. Keep talking.
Yeah. And just as a side, because we have heard this, is that especially like in rural areas where cults are prominent, like maybe in Texas, that, and I got to be careful how I say this, a lot of the local law enforcement are corrupt. They're being paid off by that said cult. So,
and
yes.
Yes, and. That, like, again, spoiler alert, right? I'm a child trafficking survivor, and now I train law enforcement to identify and combat child trafficking. I'm going to unpack that further. A lot of well-meaning people like, oh, they're the bad guys. Cute. So what are we supposed to do about it? Just sit there and watch? They're a humor. Can't. can't and won't. But also, please believe that I'm very selective in who I actually work with. Please understand there are many good people on the front lines who are blocked by their leadership. I'm overgeneralizing so much here. There are many people in law enforcement that are as pissed off as you and I. I'm going to make another generalization. Generally, the good ones are the ones that don't get promoted. Remember right. The cult playbook? You have to earn your place. So the people that make their way up in the rank to higher positions of power, generally they have to look past a lot of things to get there. Now then, the people that will not get promoted, that are not afraid to speak up, that don't have too much to lose, sometimes they can be helpful in restructuring the foundation. All right, so let's span out. I'm going to tell a story from my childhood, and then I'm going to go back to this concept of the sharp end of the sword versus the people wielding it and how intentional this problem is, because I need people to understand that. All right, let's start here. I give you two options. Is the problem of, let's go with human trafficking, even though my focus is specific to child trafficking. Is the problem of human trafficking in America, real quick, we're the main problem in the entire world. The USA is the largest source and destination. We are the main consumers. No one's okay with that. Here's my question. Is the problem of human trafficking in America intentional or is it incompetence? While you think about that, I'm going to quantify this. Narrow human trafficking all around the world, down to the United States, were the biggest problem. Narrow that down to child trafficking, all the different types of labor trafficking, sex trafficking, all these bad things. Child sex trafficking generates, it used to be $50 billion, now it's something like $76 billion every single year in the United States. That's more than all professional sports combined. We see that though. We see the events and the merchandise and all the different commercials and all the things in professional sports. Imagine someone calling professional sports a theory to your face. The problem is that we don't see child trafficking and it's been so politicized, stigmatized, etc., that people are much more comfortable thinking that if they close their eyes, it'll go away. But that's not helping children. So with that volume that I just mentioned, let's not even imagine how many souls that is. Let's say it's $50 billion a year. It's recently confirmed at 76, I believe. Okay, now here's the rhetorical question. Why don't we have a federal agency that is dedicated to combating human trafficking?
That's a great question.
Competence or intentional? See how I can't take any of this seriously? Okay. So I'm here to help people unpack the logic for themselves, because let me say that more honestly. Why aren't they even pretending to care? I'm not asking the federal government to intervene with a problem that they're obviously not here to solve and greatly benefiting from. Okay, I'm being real nice when I say this. Anyone in a position of power in politics in the United States is very aware that that's a problem, and they are very apparently okay with pretending that it's not, but they're not even pretending to care. And that's concerning because, like, the war on drugs, I'm not saying that's been ineffective. I'm saying they're doing a lot of pretending to care, getting a lot of votes, laundering a lot of money. Why aren't they even pretending to care about human trafficking in America? So that rhetorical question is one of many I could ask to get to that word.
I would say money.
Intentional. Correct. So it always comes down to profits and power, always. You see how I oversimplify things with general terms that are very widely broadly applicable. It's always profits and powers. But let me be real honest. Anyone in a high position of power in the United States, in politics, etc., they are too cowardly and corrupt to acknowledge it, to make sounds with their mouth. Now, cute people want to be like, oh, but they're scared and they tried, but it's very dangerous for them. Hi, see how I'm here making sounds with my mouth? I'm a petite smiley female. I don't have Secret Service, but I'm making sounds with my mouth. So we're okay with our politicians being too cowardly and corrupt, all of them. Just for the avoidance of doubt, this is not a red versus blue issue, like that'd be so nice, but no, neither side has helped. Also, both parties are the problem, just like general corruption, etc. This has been an ongoing thing for many, 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 way too many generations. But another rhetorical question I could ask is, why has no presidential candidate ever mentioned the words child trafficking on a presidential debate stage? You're live in front of America, the world. Why would you not obliterate your opponent pretending to care? They can't even make those sounds with their mouth. Tell me they're not too cowardly and corrupt.
Because I think it's a topic that they're not willing to. I know exactly what you're saying.
It's too cowardly and corrupt.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious about this.
Yeah. Again, I know you are. And
I think they think it's too big to tackle too. And they're like, I can't change this. I'm not even going to mention it because I can't do anything about it. Yeah.
Right. We're agreeing with each other. But like, here I am making sounds with my mouth. Now let's talk about the war on drugs. Too big to tackle? How many decades have we been doing that stuff? And how much money have we laundered through it? How many lives have been saved? How much damage has been done? All right, Point is, they're not even pretending to care. Why? Too cowardly and corrupt. You've got to be both. Like, let's be honest, to look the other way when this is happening and being like, oh no, little old me can't do anything about it. Tell me saving 1,000 children doesn't matter. Tell me, right? Like, I'm not asking anyone to do the impossible. I'm asking them to do something. I'm asking them not to do nothing. I'm asking them to make sounds with their mouth, but no.
The amount of money that they spent, and I lived through this era, the Reagan era, the say no to drugs, Nancy Reagan and all that, all the money they spent against to fight drugs, it's now legal. Some of the drugs that they were banning 40 years ago, 30 years ago, that they were fighting the Contra down in Nicaragua, all that, it's legal now. It's like, so all of that time and money.
Problem is worse now. Let's look at the actual problem. Has it gotten better or worse? It has gotten worse.
So it's gotten worse.
What has the impact been? How much money has been spent? How much time has been wasted? Okay. But has it worked? No.
No.
Is it worse or better than before? It's worse. So, you know, again, that's why I said a lot of what I do is correcting the premise and just kind of rocking people into the truth. As you can tell, like, you know, not only my sarcastic personality, but like I do a lot of smiling and waving when it comes.
Let me ask you, is the war on drugs, which would be the cartel, let's just say, I know drugs can come from the Middle East where a lot of heroin is grown, but let's say South America, Central America, do you think that the cartels have, I think I know the answer to this, a hand in child trafficking, that they go hand to hand?
100%. So
drug trafficking and child trafficking go hand in hand.
Unfortunately, it is now more profitable to sell a human.
Yes, that's my point.
Illegal paraphernalia. And that is one of many reasons that human trafficking is the second largest and fastest growing criminal enterprise on the planet. Faster growth rate than drugs and arms and other illegal things, because you can sell a human multiple times a day, unlike and other products. Now then, often these crimes are convoluted, meaning multiple crime things happening in one situation. So if you smuggle or traffic, which are different things, a human across the border, it is likely that there are other illegal substances being trafficked or smuggled along with those humans. So it is rarely one type of crime just sort of sitting out there in the open with a sign saying, help me. One of the complexities of this problem is that it is not a one-size-fits-all problem. Therefore, there are not one-size-fits-all solutions. However, back to the training I'm giving law enforcement, I work at the Ranch, Texas. It's a law enforcement and government contracting training facility in South Texas. I also lived in Mexico for 10 years. I've crossed that border more than any child should. I can talk a lot more about a lot of the different layers of that process that people don't understand. But let's get to the point. The general awareness is lacking in most of our society. And let's just talk about law enforcement. Again, we're talking from local to state to federal. There are general awareness and, signs and things that everyone should know. There are SOPs that generally don't exist, meaning standard procedures that just don't exist at all. They are not given the training. We are talking about basic training. Although law enforcement has a required annual human trafficking training, ask any law enforcement officer if that's helpful, or just 8 hours of repetition that basically they're talking about sex work, not trafficking. Anyway, the point is that there's some smiling and waving, but there's some band-aids, but there's not, we're talking about actual solutions? No, they're not given actual training to combat or even identify child exploitation, much less child trafficking, much less, you know, human trafficking and et cetera. Most of the time we're talking about sex work, which is not the same thing. Yes, there's some overlap in exploitation.
Completely different.
Thank you. Completely different body of water. That's me saying it so nicely. You can tell I've said this too much. All right. So a big part of this is correcting the premise. Then what's the training part? Because knowledge is only power if you do something with it. So awareness means acknowledging, right? Another oversimplified analogy. This applies more to the public, but like awareness is acknowledging. My house is on fire. If we pretend like it's not on fire, if we're like, it's never caught on fire before and the local media hasn't talked about it yet, like, I don't believe it. That must be a theory. The house is going to burn to the ground. But if all we do is stand there and acknowledge, oh no, my house is on fire. If we don't get the bucket to hit the water, if we don't go put the fire out, if we don't take action, the house is going to burn to the ground. So awareness is only power if you do something with it. Awareness is step one. Step two is action, right? And there are many ways to act. It's about what's most effective in this situation. So with law enforcement, not only because of the differences in every, let's call it jurisdiction or area, there's going to be very different situations near the border, up north in a city, in a rural area, depending on what type of law enforcement you are. If you're an investigations or detective type unit, department, et cetera, or if you're a patrol, if you're a SWAT team, there are very different ways to handle each situation depending on what we got to work with and what we're dealing with. I'm oversimplifying a lot. The point is that specialized training is needed. And I'm not asking everyone to do the same thing. I'm asking people to have what I call a trauma-informed approach, meaning general awareness is helpful. And then let's customize or tailor that to what is the situation. If it's children being brought across the border, that's going to be different than the druggy mom selling her kid, which is going to be different from the cult that's doing a lot of bad things on the inside that we need to infiltrate and understand more about to truly understand. So we can start with a template or a premise, but we have to have an individualized approach to each situation. And yes, that's quite complex. However, there is a playbook. And that's why I'm also big on unpacking the tactics and the patterns of these different categories of child exploitation. It's a complex issue. Oversimplifying it helps us understand the categories. Then within each category, we need to tailor our approach to be effective. Yes, this is complex. I'm summarizing it, but I'm not saying it's an easy thing at all. I'm saying it's complex, not only to understand the problem, but to find the people that are truly there to help solve the problem, because a lot of people are not. So let's talk real quick about the corruption that is so prevalent, not only within law enforcement and politics, but also within these nonprofits who call themselves anti-trafficking. Google it. There are so many. Now, do some research as far as how many millions of dollars have been given, granted, allocated, spent on, quote, anti-trafficking. Let me just be real direct here. The majority of these nonprofits that are raising millions of dollars in the name of combating trafficking are simply not. So the majority of them are actually just anti-sex work or anti-porn organizations. And they're calling that the problem. They're even saying that is the root cause of the problem. And bless your hearts, but please sit down and listen, because that's not helping actual victims, actual survivors. My thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who's been exploited. However, I could unpack this because there's so many layers to this. If you're exploiting the problem, if you're raising millions of dollars to combat child trafficking and you're not combating child trafficking, you're part of the problem. That's called exploiting the problem, and you don't get to do that with this cause, no ma'am. Now, there are many different ways in which this happens, and again, refer back to the playbook. It's the same one. Often there's a religious undertone, which is fine in theory, unless your bias gets in the way of you understanding the problem and implementing real solutions. So if someone, for example, has some personal shame about their porn addiction, they might want to direct the focus and say, porn is bad, but ready? Here's the logic. Porn is bad, make it illegal, and it'll go away. Every person in law enforcement, like from chuckles to full belly laughs when I tell them that, because that's just not how the world works, guys. But the bigger concern is the premise here, or the false premise of porn is the root of sex trafficking, make it illegal, and it'll go away. Sex trafficking will go away. Like, guys, okay. So first of all, trafficking is already illegal. We don't need new bills. We don't need new paper signed and pictures taken to make it more illegal. We need to enforce the law. It's already illegal. Okay, separate body of water, pornography. Adult sexual entertainment, not the same thing as exploitation. Definitely not the same thing as child exploitation. So those are not even the same conversation. But a lot of these anti-trafficking groups that are really just anti-porn, they're not even focused on child exploitation. They're not even focused on child sex abuse material, or CSAM. I don't use the word child pornography because there is nothing pornographic about a child, and because pornography is adult sexual entertainment. I don't really care how anyone feels about it. It's constitutionally protected. Now, let me just say this. It's not my world. It's not my thing. I don't like it. It's not my personal thing, but I want adults to be adults, and I want to protect children. Seems simple. Unfortunately, this whole conversation is quite convoluted. So let's pretend that these are well-meaning advocacy groups that are raising millions of dollars in the name of combating trafficking, but they're really just making sounds with their mouth about how bad pornography is. The point, though, is that if you're anti-porn, but you're not focusing on eradicating child sex abuse material, which is something we should not even be having a problem with on the internet, but it's still a problem. How many of those organizations, though, are focusing on CSAM, child sex abuse material?
Okay, I'm going to jump in here because as you were explaining or talking about that, and I agree with you, I Googled anti-child trafficking organizations and a lot came up, obviously.
Yes.
I don't know if I want to name some of them, but I'd like your opinion. So, because I think I heard in there somewhere you said that the money that they're raising isn't really going towards the cause?
Yeah, obviously that's a generalized statement because there are good groups doing good work. I'm going to make another generalized statement. This is based on my very, way too many years of experience, both growing up as well as recently working with hundreds of different organizations, nonprofits who call themselves anti-trafficking. Okay, so this is my world. This has been my space, and I'm a survivor of said things. The majority of these organizations, I'm going to make a bold statement, the majority of these organizations are not helping the cause of anti-trafficking. The majority of these organizations that I have personally reached out to, for example, to vet them, for example, large organizations who collect millions of dollars that say they house and support survivors of trafficking. That's what they say. Their website's very pretty. You can tell they have a lot of funding. When I had survivors of child trafficking who met every qualification and needed a safe place, when I reach out to, I'm going to tell you one of many stories. I reached out to many different organizations, not only to vet them, but to see, can you help these people? There was one, I went through all the different hoops. I spent about 4 hours talking to people, sending emails, all these different things. And you know what this organization who says they house and support survivors of trafficking did? They sent me a $25 gift card to Walmart.
Wow.
But their website's pretty and people are giving them millions of dollars thinking they're contributing to help survivors of child trafficking. Okay, so there's a lot of situations like that. There's also a lot of people collecting millions of dollars in the name of combating trafficking, even saying they work with law enforcement to combat child trafficking or trafficking or whatever, and they're really just raising awareness, which is great, but it doesn't cost millions of dollars. And don't say you're helping survivors or combating trafficking. Say you're raising awareness or doing public education or preventative education or whatever. Fine, you're not combating trafficking. See where I'm going with this? I'll tell you another story. Recently, this one was like the straw that broke the camel's back for me because I've smiled and waved through so many of these organizations that are actually focused on sex work and also not actually combating anything. But all the way down to this one organization recently that said they worked with law enforcement to combat sex trafficking. And I was like, oh Lord, here we go. Okay, how do you guys define trafficking? Because that's just where I start these days. Let's just get to the chase and not waste my time. What are we even talking about here? What body of water are we even in? And again, we combat trafficking. Okay, when you get through the layers of what they were trying to say, ready? When law enforcement, not them, set up stings with adults to be adult sex workers, and when the buyer showed up to the motel to pay an adult woman for sex, and law enforcement arrested the buyer with human trafficking charges, then this organization came in and had a prayer ministry. They prayed for the buyer. That's what they do. They have a prayer ministry for the buyer. And their website and all their stuff is like combating trafficking with law enforcement. Guys, you see why I just can't not smile and wave sometimes?
Well, it's so you don't scream and shout.
Oh, it's a chosen form of release. Yeah, it's for everybody's benefit that I just smile and wave.
Let me ask you a question, because after Googling that term, of course, and I'm scrolling through some of them, and a lot of them we've all heard from either on television or in the news. I'm afraid to ask you this question. The website or the organization, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, that's the number one group that came up.
Let's talk about what they do. It's a government funded, I believe they collect $1 or $2 billion a year. It's in the B though. All right, so that's basically the authority for collecting numbers. So what they do is collect data. What do they do with that data? They report it to law enforcement. So NCMEC, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, is the authority on collecting data on child exploitation. They do a better job than anyone else collecting data. They receive over 32 million reports a year of child sex abuse material on the internet. Now, what's done about that? What do? They send those tips to law enforcement. And what's done with that? How many prosecutions, how many cases, how many investigations from those over 32 million reports every year? So we have God bless everybody who's doing their best. Like, let me just say this, do your job, good for you. But what are we really doing with those numbers and those pretty charts?
Well, and that's why I asked you the question. It's a huge organization and you hear about it on the news all the time, but it sounds to me more like they're a data center. They're collecting data. Are they doing anything? No.
They report to law enforcement. Now I work on
go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Melody.
I was just going to say, essentially using her house burning analogy, they're just telling us how many houses are on fire. How many houses are on fire? But we're not putting them out. We're just telling you there's lots of houses on fire right now, which isn't exactly helpful.
Right. But we know that already. We can see the smoke.
Right. And you know, said softly, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but do we need like if it's 10,000 kids a year or 100,000 or a million, like, is that going to change our approach or can we act yet? At what point are we going to act? Because like, what's the cutoff here where we're going to actually do something with these numbers? Now, I work on the law enforcement training side where if law enforcement has an investigative branch or unit that actually follows up with NCMEC tips, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, if law enforcement designates a department to actually look into this further, that's a whole other issue. Because like, I'm going to use soft words here, but most investigation units are also just data collection centers that collect numbers and put charts together, and not much is done with that. So a big part of my role beyond correcting the premise is to make our knowledge actionable, meaning we don't need to find more data. I'm not saying more data doesn't exist or that it's not important. I'm saying if we're not doing something with it, we're not as effective as we could be if we were doing something about it, correct? So for example, for the desk nerds to collect the data is great, but then are we making that data actionable for the patrol officers, the law enforcement, or the warrants, or whatever? Like, are we doing something with it? Because if not, let's stop collecting. Well, I'm not saying to stop collecting numbers, but like, let's focus less on collecting numbers and actually focus on combating the issue. Now, I'm going to generalize, but most law enforcement and service members that are on the front lines want to do something about it. I understand that there are different levels of corruption, and I'm not saying every single person is not corrupt. I'm also saying not everyone in law enforcement is corrupt. Please believe there are people that are as pissed off as you and I with the broken system. I know law enforcement officers who take their precious day off and their own time and money to go get trained or to go handle problems and rescue kids they were not allowed to rescue while they were on the clock. I'm not saying that's the majority. I'm saying I need the public to know that that exists and that's not okay. I'm literally getting chills, but like, what are we willing to do about it beyond acknowledging the problem? That applies to the public officials whose job it is to protect and serve. It also applies to we the people. Because if we sit here and be like, oh, but everybody's corrupt, so what, we just sit back and complain? Like, right. With respect and love, what are we willing to do about it? Because sometimes that means a petite smiley female who gives no shit has to smile and wave and take a lot of bullshit and deal with a lot of people whose premise I need to correct. But hey, I'm willing to do it because I'm unwilling to do nothing. I'm unwilling to observe this going on while we stand back and complain. So I'm inviting everyone to be part of the solution.
I remember a movie that I saw, and Hollywood is slowly starting to get into this area because there were a couple of movies that I have seen where these, like a father would hire a mercenary to go overseas and grab his daughter who was kidnapped or something. You know, so Hollywood's doing something. I've seen them like on Prime and Netflix, whatever. What's interesting, and Melody, we had Kim on to talk about cults, and somehow we ended up in human trafficking, which is great because we cover both topics on this podcast. And I'm really glad that it kind of, we took the exit off the highway and went this way because we don't have enough episodes on human trafficking.
Right.
Kim, tell us a little bit. We're going to wrap it up. I'm going to talk to you off mic about some ideas that I have. Tell us a little bit about your website that you have, Digital Defenders United.
Yes. So I founded a nonprofit after having worked with many in order to unite the experts, because my analysis here is that we have a lot of different realms of expertise that are needed in this fight and that are not having cohesive conversations about how to create an effective strategy. So for example, from tech experts and cybersecurity, et cetera, tech platforms, to law enforcement, to policymakers, to nonprofits and survivors, all these very separate categories of expertise are needed in this fight. And my goal is to not only unite them, but create tangible solutions that actually help people. So digitaldefendersunited.org also has a lot of information about digital safety. I have narrowed down my focus publicly away from the awareness of child trafficking because it's too dark, scary, gross for most people to comprehend. And it's not actionable for most people, for the average citizen. Like, what are you going to do about it, even if you're willing to be aware? However, digital safety is something I'm very passionate about. I've done a lot of undercover work with law enforcement, pretending to be a child on the internet. Realize that on a spectrum of intensity, we're like all the way on the lesser side of the intensity here. That being said, what I've seen that I can't unsee while pretending to be a child on the internet is something I refuse to let my niece and other kids I know grow up in that world. Over my dead body, is that happening? So beyond child sex abuse material, which is a stupid fucking problem, and I can explain that further, but that's also an intentional problem that I'm here to expose and dismantle. There's also the rampant predators that are getting access to children. that shouldn't be happening. And I'm working on the tech side of that, not only with tech giants, but people that are actually solving problems. The heroes might surprise you. Then I'm also big on the public safety and awareness of digital safety. So in a nutshell, parents, I'm begging you, please don't give the internet unlimited, unsupervised access to your child. Please. I understand you are not, I'm not asking you to raise your child under a rock. I'm saying, please don't give them unlimited, unsupervised access. So there's tons of all free safety resources and tools and checklist style manuals on my website to help people better safeguard their children against these threats in the digital world.
And I'm going to ask Melody to step in and ask you the one of the final questions that we ask. One of the biggest growing problems on the internet today, and I know a little bit about that because I do some investigations in the scam, in the real scam, financial scam world, is sextortion, is where they get children to take nudes of themselves. And then there's a podcast called AARP. And I think it was on that podcast, there was a father who had his son commit suicide because he was sextorted, and they got his nude somehow, or AI was something, it was along those lines. AI had created some nudes of him, and they sent them to him, and they said, if you don't pay this amount of money, we're going to release them. And he committed suicide. And it's so... Yeah, so I said a lot there, but there's sextortion, and then there's now AI is in the picture, which is a topic for another whole day. So before we let our guests go, we ask them a question. Melody, you want to ask her?
I am actually going to ask a different question, I think, today.
Good.
We normally do, but our this interview took a different turn than what I expected. And
correct.
You've given, which I'm okay with, because we are the culture of cults and human trafficking. So I'm very happy to have it have gone in this direction. You've used your personal cult and human trafficking experience to become an advocate, and that is what we have focused on, and we are good with that. So my question that I would like to ask you, which you've already touched it a little bit, but what can I do? What can we do, Kim? What can we do? What can Andrew and I do? What can our audience do? Even if it's just one simple thing, rather than burying our heads in the sand like ostriches and saying, we don't like this, but we don't know what to do about it. Tell me what to do. Do you have a solution? What can I do?
I really love that question. So first of all, thank you. There's a lot we didn't get to in this interview, and I'm happy to do a follow-up more focused on cults, but there's, you know, you can sense my passion and also my desire to not only unpack the problem, but also spoon-feed solutions. Oversimplified, which I tend to do, I'm asking everyone to do something. I'm asking no one to look away. I'm asking everyone to be willing to act, because knowledge is only power if we do something with it. Now, the where do I start is a great question. I would refer people to my website because I built it to answer that question that I get often. And it's not as heroic and big and, you know, important as people would like to make it look like. But protecting children in the digital world is such an important safeguard. Again, I work a lot in that space, and there's so much that can be prevented. So I'm asking people to communicate with their children. I'm asking them to be willing to have those tough conversations, because if you're not, please believe someone on the internet is. And you want your child to learn those answers to their questions from you, from a safe source. You also want them to trust you, that they can come to you with these questions and concerns, and that they're not going to get in trouble. They're going to get help. So number one, please communicate with your children about these risks, obviously in an age-appropriate way, but also in a way that actually compels them. Don't just take their phone away. Explain to them why these risks are there and why you're there to protect them. The way I explain it to my nephews, I say, it's not that I don't trust you. It's that I don't trust the internet with you. And your auntie works with good guys who take down bad guys that are looking for kids to hurt on the internet. You're not doing anything wrong. I need to know there are bad guys out there looking for kids to hurt. So I'm here to protect you from them. You see how the conversation can be simple yet effective if we're willing to have them. So number one, communicate with your kids. Number two, there are different types of software and apps that I'm begging every parent to use to help monitor their child's digital devices. If you must give some form of access to the internet to your kid, which I understand, please use these monitoring softwares. The ones I recommend are Bark and SpyX. There are others you could research. Those are the most comprehensive, but I'm actually working on other tech solutions that are much more comprehensive, because there needs to be various other levels of safeguards as well. The third thing I'm asking people to do is look for something you can do in your community. Don't try to overcomplicate this. Look for something you can do. Is it an after-school program? Is it a Boys and Girls Club? Are there kids in your neighborhood? Are there kids on your street that need help? I promise you, the best thing for these kids is having a strong advocate. Just imagine, like, if I had had one adult come up to me in those 4 years that I was in Houston, Texas, and just ask if I was okay. If I knew that not only, like, this is not normal, I shouldn't have to accept this, but also there are people there who care and who could be safe, who could help me. Imagine how much that would empower a child who's being abused in those controlled environments and they don't have any kind of lifeline to the outside world. Be that safe adult. As you know, a lot of this data on child protection and child exploitation is limited at best, or let's just say very lacking. So no one knows the real numbers, but here's the point. If it's something like 1 in 5 children, if all of us picked 5 children that we know right now and promised it wouldn't be them, we could change that statistic.
Wow. Well, we can't thank you enough, Kim. Thank you so much for coming on the show and educating us and opening up ideas. And this, her website will definitely be in the show notes because I think our audience is going to
I'm looking
that.
At it
Need
right
that.
Now.
It's a resource. It needs to be there. So we can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And I do think we're probably going to have you back to actually maybe talk about your experience in the Children of God. But this has gone in a direction that I'm very happy with because we haven't had a good human trafficking episode in a while. So I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much.
Lot more to say. It's my honor.
Ditto. I'm not even going to say anything after that. We will have you back because I did not know to the level of which you were involved. I thought you were coming on for a cult story, and that's which is important in itself, but this is another whole level. So, Kim, thank you so much for coming on today. And like Melody said, I'm sure you'll be back.
And once again, we want to thank Kim Kelly so much for coming on the show and sharing all of her knowledge and information with us and educating us. The interview itself, I mean, I knew she was a human trafficking advocate. I just did not know exactly the direction that the interview was going to go. I'm not complaining. Like I said, maybe we should have her back on the story, or maybe focus more a little bit on her cult experience. But wow.
Yeah, no, she's coming back. And I think we should just explain to the audience my reaction at the end. So Melody does most of the recruiting, or if not all of the recruiting and the guest bookings. And she's the producer behind the podcast. And I literally show up for the interviews. And there are times when she'll tell me maybe a day or two in advance, like tomorrow we have somebody from, let's just say Jehovah's Witnesses, and it'll just be an acknowledgement. It's sort of by design that we've done this, that I don't know much about the guest because we want, it's just funny to say in the third person, but we want Andrew's real reaction to what he's about to hear.
Yes.
Because I'm not the ex-cult member here. And it is my reactions that sometimes bring out some of the great questions that I come out of left field. So today's episode was a real shock because I didn't see that coming at all. And like Melody said, we're more than happy that she went in that direction. Yeah, human trafficking, because we haven't, from day one when we named the podcast Cultimatum, I did want to cover human trafficking because it's a big, huge issue. If it's on the same level, I would say with cults, it's a huge problem in the world. And I don't have any of the stats or numbers, so I'm not going to pretend I just thought it should be covered in the podcast. And we just haven't had, we've had what, 4 or 5 maybe guests?
Yeah, something like that. But you know what, that we talked about that at the end of when we did our 1 year celebration episode. And we talked about all that we were going to do more human trafficking episodes. So
correct.
Here is one. This is a good start for our audience because again, so articulate. And she just did an excellent job in telling us what we can do.
And so she when we before we recorded, before we hit the record button, she actually said, Melody often asks the guests, are there any boundaries? And is there anything we don't want to talk about? And she said, I don't really want to talk about the cult in detail. I'd like to talk about the message I have. And now I know what she was talking about. So, if you notice, she didn't get into the cult at all, really.
Right. She kind of just said the cult she was part of and how her mom was connected and where she grew up and some of the things that she did as a child, as far as I'm going to say panhandling for the cult or whatever. So,
and what's interesting about most, like one of our guests, when they come out of the cults and how they deconstruct, is her deconstruction is working with law enforcement for the past, we didn't ask her how many years she's been doing it, but I'm going to guess maybe 10 years or more that right. She's been working with law enforcement and training them on how to spot human traffic or children in that position. So just an amazing episode.
I guarantee this is part of her healing process. This is how she's deconstructing, how she's healing. This is what she's doing, and she's helping other people. And I'm just so impressed. I'm almost speechless.
Me too.
And rarely am I speechless, but I don't even know how to. She was so articulate that she's making me feel like I'm stumbling over my words, because she does not hesitate to put things in words so easily, and it just flows right off her tongue. So it's very impressive. We can't thank Kim enough for coming on the show and educating all of us. And I don't think this is the last, as the audience, this is the last year. This is not the last you're going to hear from Kim on our show and our podcast, because she will be back. And of course, as always, we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. As always, your support is greatly appreciated. And if you did enjoy today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review our podcast, especially on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it really does make a difference and help us out. Don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes as well.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms such as Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cult or human trafficking that you'd like to share, reach out to us at Cultimatum Podcast.
And if you happen to be an ex-cult member and you're looking for additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you'd like to hear more from me, I do have two other podcasts. One is called Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew. And I recently launched a third podcast, I'm crazy. Three podcasts in a week. It's called The Weekend Rant. And that's also available everywhere, your podcast, where you get this podcast. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining this podcast, you can show your support through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in our show notes. Every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about human trafficking and cults. And I do want to make a quick mention that I was editing today's episode and I said something, and Melody and I both said, you know, nobody has donated up until this point. And that is not the case. We did get a couple of donations in the last month. So I do want to give a shout out. So if the person who donated, and we're not going to name names, but the person who donated, we want to recognize that we did get it. And we thank you very, very much for that donation.
Yes, we do appreciate it. Thank you. That's a good point, Andrew. I'm glad you pointed that out. And of course, to our guest, as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.